Good morning, and welcome to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, in Green Valley. Rick Hansen, PhD, is a psychologist and New York Times best-selling author. He's been invited to speak at NASA, Oxford, Stanford, Harvard, and meditation centers worldwide. His books are available in 28 languages and include Making Great Relationships, Hardwiring Happiness, Just One Thing, and Mother Nurture. His work has been featured on the BBC, CBS, NPR, and other major media. And now, Just One Thing. Are you feeling cross? The practice. Turn anger into a peaceful heart. Why? Let's be realistic. It's completely normal to get angry with our partners, children, in-laws, clueless boss, or ourself. There's no need to feel guilty about anger itself. The real question is, what can you do about it? On the one hand, anger is a healthy emotion. It shines a bright light on things that should be different, like a child's incessant whining, a partner's broken agreements, or some stupid workplace policy that keeps you from your kids. And it energizes you to try to change them. Bottling up anger numbs your feelings, your other feelings as well, and it wears on your health. Acting like you are not mad when you really are is inauthentic. And if you have kids, it teaches them to put on a false face themselves. Not a good lesson. On the other hand, anger can be an emotional roller coaster that stresses the body and can create bad feelings for hours. And no other emotion has such an impact on relationships. For kids, when mom or dad gets mad, that's scary and often overwhelming since their parents are so big, powerful, and important. In an intimate relationship, frequent anger is very wounding. After a while, anyone would start wanting to step back from a person who's angry a lot of the time. Fortunately, there's a healthy middle path between tight-lipped self-censoring and boiling over rage. How? Stop things from building up. We usually get mad in two stages. First, there's the priming. Tension, frustration, bodily discomfort, fatigue, gripes, etc., which mount up like a growing pile of dynamite. Then comes the firecracker that sets it all off. During the priming phase, try to diffuse things before there's a blow-up. Here are a few ideas. Don't overgive. One trick is to imagine asking your future self how you will feel if you commit to taking on another task. Another is to adopt the blanket policy of never agreeing to anything until there's been adequate time to think it over. Blow off steam along the way. Try not to accumulate a residue of irritation from individual interactions. Take a break before reaching the breaking point. Most people become quite frayed by the time they've been alone with a young child or staring at a screen, or dealing with other people for 3 or 4 hours. Make it a serious priority to find some way, any way, to take a break before the pot boils over. Understand what makes you angry. When anger arises, there's typically more to the story. Let's say it's Wednesday after work. A mother is in the store with her 3-year-old son, and all she wants to do is get home, make some dinner, and relax. But he wants some candy. She says no, and he throws a major tantrum. People are staring. She feels mortified. Somehow, she gets him out of the store and into the car, and then she really yells at him. In that moment, the intensity of her anger is at least a 6 or 7 on the 10-point scale. But now, let's change some of the elements of the situation. Suppose it's a Saturday morning instead, and she's feeling rested and relaxed. How intense do you think her anger would be in that case? Probably less. Maybe 1 to 3 on the anger scale. Or suppose that she's at home, not out at the store, when her son throws his tantrum. No one is watching and she doesn't have to care about what anyone is thinking. How angry do you think she'd be then? Probably, again, less. Fatigue and embarrassment can amplify feelings by 5 or so points while having nothing to do with the actual seriousness of a situation. But when the amplifiers in life are understood, suddenly there's a lot less to be mad about. Key ways to turn anger into peace. Don't let things build up. Don't overgive. Blow off steam as you go along, etc. Understand the thoughts or ways you are perceiving things that are the true sources of your anger. Try to sense down to the softer emotions beneath anger, like hurt or fear. Acknowledge those to yourself or express them to others. If you feel like you're going to blow up, walk away or call a friend. Get professional help if you are directing anger at yourself or others in harmful ways. Ask your heart for guidance. You are listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. Here's a quote from Dr. Rick. Recognize anger. Feel it. Don't suppress it. Explore it and find whatever is valid in what it is telling you. Also, look beneath it to the hurt or sorrow or outrage on behalf of others. Help yourself open to and include all of yourself. And here's another Just One Thing. Are you stressed or upset? The practice, leave the red zone. Why? There I was recently, my mind darting in different directions about projects in process, frazzled about little tasks backing up, uneasy about a tax record from 2010 we couldn't find, feeling irritated about being irritable, hurrying to get to work, body keyed up, internal sense of pressure. Not freaked out, not running from an attacker, not suffering a grievous loss. My own troubles tiny in comparison to those of so many our others. But still, the needle on my personal stressometer was pegged in the red zone. Then, that quiet background, knowing in all of us, nudged me to cool down, dial back, defrazzle, take a breath, exhale slowly, repeat, start getting a sense of center, exhale again, slow the thoughts down, pick one thought of all rightness or goodness and stay with it. Exhaling, worry about the future, coming into this moment, just sensations, calming, mind getting clearer, focusing on what I'll do this day, and knowing that's all I can do. The body sense of settling down yet again, sinking in to make it one bit easier to settle down the next time. Leaving the red zone, not all the way to green, more like yellow, but no longer even orange. Wow. I'm sure you have your own sense of this process. It's natural to move back and forth between green and red, which our ancestors evolved to survive and pass on their genes. Green is the resting state, the home base of the brain and the body, characterized by activation of the parasympathetic nervous system, repair and refueling of bodily systems, and a peaceful, happy, and loving mind. In green, we are usually benevolent toward ourselves, others, and the world. When we rev up into red in order to avoid threats, pursue opportunities, or deal with relationship issues, the sympathetic fight-or-flight nervous system activates stress hormones like cortisol, course through our blood system, and broadly defined, hatred, greed, and heartache course through the mind. In red, we're primed for fear, possessiveness, and aggression. If you're upset, if you're anxious, frustrated, irritated, or feeling put down or inadequate, you're in red, or heading there quickly. You may have read my characterizations of green as the responsive mode of the brain and red as its reactive mode. Both modes are natural and necessary. But there are no innate costs to green, only benefits. While the benefits of red, for example, speed, intensity, are offset by serious costs to well-being, health, and longevity. Mother Nature didn't care about the costs of red when most of our primate, hominid, and human ancestors died young. These days, though, it behooves us to center in green as much as we can. Using green approaches for threats and opportunities, and leave red as soon as possible. This is the foundation of psychological healing, long-term health, everyday well-being, personal growth, spiritual practice, and a peaceful and widely prosperous world. How? In a busy life, each day gives you dozens of opportunities to leave the red zone and move toward green. Each time you do this, you gradually strengthen the neural substrates of green, one synapse at a time. In order to cope with urgent needs, the body can switch from green to red in a heartbeat. Then, it takes a while to return to green, since stress hormones need time to metabolize out of your system. even in yellow and orange, the effects and thus the costs of stress activation are present. So as soon as you notice the needle of your stressometer moving into yellow and beyond, take action. In your mind, intend to settle back down. Exhale slowly, twice as long as the inhalation. This helps light up the parasympathetic nervous system. Think of something, anything, that makes you feel safer, more fed and fulfilled, or more appreciated and cared about. Focus on these good feelings, stay with them, sense them sinking in. Relax tension in your body as best as you can. As you calm a bit, find your priority in whatever situation is stressing you and zero in on the key specific doable action or actions that is or are needed. Take refuge in knowing that you can only do what you can, that you can only encourage the causes of good things, but can't control the results themselves. In the world, try to slow down and step back. Speak carefully. Buy yourself some time. Drink some water, get some food, go to the bathroom. Before acting, raise your level of functioning. That is, move from red to green, the center from which effective action flows. Try not to act from fear, anger, frustration, shame, or a bruised ego. Don't add logs to the fire. These approaches are not a panacea. They don't always work. It's like training a wild Mustang to become a saddle horse. Over and over again, you bring gentleness and firmness, you rein in fear and fire, and encourage peaceful ease. You woo nature and help yourself to come home to green. You are listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. And here's another. What's the hurry? The practice? Avoid the rush. Why? As I was meditating one morning, our cat hopped up into my lap. It felt sweet to sit there with him, and yet, even though I was feeling fine and had plenty of time, there was this internal pressure to start zipping along with emails and calls and all the other clamoring minutiae of the day. You see the irony. We rush about as a means to an end, as a method for getting results in the form of good experiences, such as relaxation and happiness. Hanging out with our cat, I was afloat in good experiences, but the autopilot inside of the coconut still kept trying to suck me back into methods for getting relaxation and happiness, as if I weren't already feeling that way. And of course, by jumping up and diving into doingness, I'd break the mood and lose the relaxation and happiness. That is the point of doingness. Sometimes we do need to rush. Maybe you've got to get your kids to school on time, or your boss really has to have that report by the end of the day. Okay. But much of the time, we rev up and race around because of unnecessary internal pressures, like unrealistic standards for ourselves, or because external forces are trying to hurry us along for their own purposes. not because of our own needs. How do you feel when you're rushing? Perhaps there's a bit of positive excitement, but if you're like me, there's mostly, if not entirely, a sense of tension, discomfort, and anxiety. This kind of stress isn't pleasant for the mind, and over time, it's really bad for the body. Plus, there's a loss of autonomy. The rush is pushing you one way or another, rather than you yourself deciding where you want to go and at what pace. Instead, how about stepping aside from the rush as much as you can and into your own well-being, health, and autonomy? For starters, be mindful of rushing, your own and others. See how other people assume deadlines that aren't actually real or get time pressured and intense about things that aren't important. And yep, you get to decide for yourself what you think is real or important. Notice the internal shoulds or musts or simply habits that speed you up. Then, when the demands of others bear down upon you, buy yourself some time. What the psychologist and Buddhist teacher Tara Brach calls the sacred pause, in order to create a space in which you are free to choose how you will respond. Are you letting the rushing of others become your own? Slow down that conversation. Ask questions and find out what's really true. Consider the sign I once saw in a car repair shop. Your lack of planning is not my emergency. On your own side of the street, try not to create emergencies for yourself. You can get a lot done at your own pace without rushing. Plan ahead and don't procrastinate until you're forced into hurrying. More fundamentally, be realistic about your own resources. It's a kind of modesty, a healthy humility, to finally admit to yourself and maybe others that you can't carry 5 quarts in a 1 gallon bucket. There are 168 hours in a week. Not 169. It's also a kind of healthy renunciation, relinquishment to set the ego, the drivenness, the appetite, or the ambition that overcommits and sets you up for rushing. And it's a matter of seeing clearly what is, a matter of being in reality rather than being confused or in a sense deluded. Nkosi Johnson was the South African boy born with HIV who became a national advocate for children with AIDS before dying at age 12. And not one of us can do more than what he said here. Do all you can with what you have, in the time you have, in the place where you are. Also, watch how the mind routinely gets caught up in becoming, in making plans that draw us into desires that draw us into rushing. The trick is to see this happening before it captures you. Most deeply, try to rest in and enjoy the richness of this moment, even an ordinary moment, with its sounds, sights, tastes, smells, sensations, feelings, and thoughts, is amazingly interesting and rewarding. Afloat in the present, there's no need to rush along to anything else, even when you don't have a cat in your lap. You've been listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. We are so busy these days that it's great to have just one thing to focus on, a simple theme to reflect on and be inspired by. These practices are grounded in brain science, positive psychology, and contemplative training. They're simple and easy to do, and they produce powerful results. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, in Green Valley. Thank you so much for listening today, and I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.